and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Michael Gray. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good.
As is usual lately,
yes.
I can just barely hear you.
You can barely hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to speak up even louder.
All right.
Great. And Sherry, you are ready to go on a trip, is that correct?
I am packing almost as we speak.
Great.
Yes. Headed off for Charlottesville, Virginia, and then to Yogaville,
yes,
which is somewhere near Charlottesville. I'm not certain exactly where, but I hope other people look it up and find out and come and see me there.
Great.
And then get on the big bird for Zambia.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. Yes, I'm actually getting quite eager as I begin to put things in the suitcase.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It is very strange, though, to be packing for winter in the middle of summer. It stretches the imagination. But I know it's winter there, and so I'm going to put those jackets in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take it on faith.
Take it on faith. Yep.
Great. Sherry, we have a caller.
Very good. A fast dialer.
You got right to the head of the queue.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to welcome Paul from Mountain View. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Sherry and Michael.
Good evening, Paul.
So you're headed off to Africa soon, huh?
I am.
Wow.
I am.
Wow.
In just a very few days.
Wow.
And just this afternoon, I was in conversation with a group of people from a nonprofit in San Francisco, of all places. They were recently featured in Time magazine because they've invented a solar-powered internet connection.
Hmm.
And so I was just speaking to them about the possibility of us bringing it into Ndola, Zambia, and very exciting. They're currently just in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be pioneering this in Zambia, and they are open to that. So I'm very, very eager for all that we're going to be able to look into on this trip.
Wow, and who knows what could happen.
Yes. It's just all possible.
So, Sherry, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
So I've been doing Zen practice for a couple years now,
mm-hmm.
and it's been great.
Yes.
And I notice things in my life changing.
Yes.
And sometimes...
It is, and they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and some of it's been really, like, obviously, oh, this is great. And some of it, I get kind of consternation.
Yes.
So I'm calling about the latter.
Uh-huh.
Here's what I've been noticing is when I'm in social events, sometimes it'll come to a point in a conversation, and I just really have nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not bad or whatever, I just really have nothing to say, and
mm-hmm.
some part of me doesn't feel the need to invent anything to say.
Mm-hmm.
And there I am, and then I kind of panic.
Uh-huh. So it doesn't feel possible to say to the other person, well, I just realized I've run out of things to say.
No, I haven't thought of that, so I could try that.
Yeah. You know, authenticity is often a good route.
Huh.
You know, that in itself, of course, could spark a fascinating conversation.
Mm.
Because probably the other person knows that experience as well.
Mm.
It's just that if in that being the right socialized person, you know, we're supposed to develop the skill of just mindlessly going on about nothing for extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And if we lack that skill, either it would seem permanently or temporarily, then, you know, ego wants to go to a place of, oh, my God, there's something wrong with this. But just being there and reporting what's going on with you is always an option.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, because it's like, well, it's partly a cultural thing, too, but silence isn't a really common thing in North American culture.
Right. Oh, not at all. In fact, that's a mark of, you know, people will use that as the sign of a really deep relationship. You know, we can actually be quiet together.
Mm.
This is something very, very special that we have to work toward, because otherwise, you know, we're just going to stand or sit around and be really uncomfortable in one another's presence. But if you're comfortable with yourself, then it's much easier to be comfortable with other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So along those lines of kind of authenticity and conversation, sometimes I find myself in a situation where I'm really paying attention to somebody and really listening,
mm-hmm.
but I find that kind of like they're talking and they've kind of forgotten that I'm there. I do this too when I'm talking sometimes. And it gets kind of boring for
uh-huh.
the listener.
Yeah.
And
unconsciousness is boring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I kind of shift around or try to say something or whatever, but there's a part of me in those situations that feels like I don't like this. And I mean,
uh-huh.
I can find ways to end conversations, but I'm just not sure. Well, there's never certainty, but I just don't know where to go in those cases.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, what we can suspect is that their unconsciousness has made you very aware of your unconsciousness.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because center is never bored.
Hmm.
Never. Presence is never boring. And center is never bored. So in that situation, there's a little red flag that goes up that says, oops, I think they're not the only unconscious person in this conversation.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the moment that you realize that, you're back.
Uh-huh.
So then it's a workshop. Uh-huh. You get to look at what's going on with you and what part of you has drifted off or what you've drifted off into and who thinks that this is boring and wants to get out of here. And you know, what you're describing is a situation in which ego says, there's nothing here for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this person is just massaging their own ego.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go somewhere to get mine massaged.
Mm-hmm.
And so to come to that conscious awareness, then it can be interesting to just watch what it's like to be with somebody as they are unconsciously going on about whatever, and you're using it as an opportunity to be present and breathe and just enjoy life.
Yeah. Yeah, it brings to mind for me one time when I talked with somebody who was so talkative that I did an experiment. And I didn't say anything for 10 minutes to see what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept going.
Yeah.
But interestingly, once I realized that, I felt a lot better about just ending the conversation when I was done.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was just like, okay, I'm done, so now I'm going to interrupt and end this.
Yeah. And not from a mean, cruel, judgmental place, but just there it there's no sense in being here any longer. We're done.
Yeah.
Time to move on.
Yeah, I was done, and I guess that was okay.
Uh-huh. Especially if it seemed okay and felt okay.
Yeah, at that point it did.
Mm-hmm. You know, often, well, always, we can meet someone with their own energy. We can match energy with someone. Mm-hmm. And rather than offending them, they often feel met, seen, heard. Mm. And so, you know, a person who can talk for 10 minutes without any apparent recognition of the person that they're talking to is probably used to people interrupting them and ending the conversation.
Yeah, so I realized maybe some of the work here for me is to think about the parts of me that feel compelled to sort of give to somebody or kind of hang in a situation that I don't necessarily want to be in.
Mm-hmm. And to find out who doesn't want to be there. Because, again, it gets us back to that place of there's a better moment to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I can't remember how the timing of this is going to go, but yesterday we recorded, pre-recorded a radio show for when we're in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a group discussion with the monks. And we had, three of us had just come back from a retreat in Pittsburgh. And we all had kind of nightmarish travel adventures.
Uh-huh.
And so two of them were on the same shuttle and reporting that they're, you know, their plane is really late and they get in and they get on the super shuttle and it's full of people and they're driving around through these neighborhoods in the middle of the night. And
uh-huh.
This guy on the shuttle is saying, this is the worst experience of my life. This is the worst experience of my life.
Huh.
And what each one of them reported was, number one, just feeling great sympathy for this poor person.
Yeah.
And for somebody suffering like that, and that each of them had the experience of, there's nothing inherently awful about this.
Mm.
The plane was late. It's the middle of the night. We're in a shuttle. we're going home. We're going to get to sleep. We have beds. We have enough to eat. You know, let's just ride along and enjoy the ride. Look out the window and look at the sights and see what's going on. And for me, it was such a good example of that, what I consider to be fact, that there is no better moment. You know, ego likes this moment, doesn't like that moment, but that's ego. That's not the moment.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So wherever I am, if I'm really there, if I'm present, it's a great place to be. If I'm not, wherever I am, it's a misery.
And for me, then, being present could realize that in the conversation I'm in, that I'm done.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Mm.
Absolutely. There's nothing about any of it that requires a particular experience or that's going to result in a particular experience. So you get to the point of realizing, okay, that's it. And that's why I said, you know, no judgment. It's not coming from a mean place. It's just, that's the end of the conversation. And if it had been an utterly fascinating conversation, you would have still at some point gotten to the end of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because life tends to move us along. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, it's kind of life is always in a chop-chop mode. You know, to-doom, 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 from thing to thing to thing, next, 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 next. And even if we're lying on a beach, you know, on a lounge chair under an umbrella, life is still moving right along. You know, the waves are, mm-hmm. It's a new wave. It's a new breath. It's a new moment.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks very much, Sharon.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. The phone lines are open here. We'd love to hear from you today. The phone number is toll-free in North America, 866-613-8255. 1612. And if you're further away, you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. Sherry, I have some emails here.
My goodness. We had gotten through all those emails, and here they are building up again. This is very good.
I hate to tell you, but we didn't actually get all the way through the ones from before.
I see. Okay, well, I was very...
We made a big dent in it.
Okay. Well, I was getting very happy that no matter how many we do, people are still writing them into us. So I was trying to be very supportive of that pursuit.
Yes. I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Sherry, this may be the fastest follow-up response you've gotten yet. I called and asked, quote, can spiritual practice be used as an escape, end quote. As soon as we hung up, I felt a momentary opening and positive feeling about coming to a place of facing this after lifetimes, when immediately the voices started saying, quote, yeah, but look at all those other people who are already there, who have already faced conditioned mind and have been able to live out their natural talents and can have love and support in their lives now, unlike you, unquote. Ah, back into pain I go. There's nothing special about me or this. It's just taken me forever to get here, and I've had to suffer all these years. For what? Now you and I see what I have to deal with moment by moment, and why it appears so big and overwhelming.
I'm not sure I was following along perfectly with that. Now you and I see what I'm up against each moment. Is that what the line was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't tell whether the writer is just saying, ain't it the truth, or that this is being presented as something unusual. I hope it's choice number one, because, of course, that reaction is absolutely the reaction that, yes, if I were in a room full of people, I would ask people, so for how many of you is that true? And every person in the room would lift their hand up.
Yes.
Because that's just how, I mean, what the writer has described is exactly how it works. I have, something is going on, I call into a radio show, visit a friend who loves me unconditionally, I have a counselor that I really, there are a number of places where we can be with somebody who will kind of reflect back to us what's going on, and we see it, and there's a moment of clarity. And what's going to follow that is conditioning coming in like an out-of-control locomotive to close that opening up and get us back into misery and suffering. That's how it works. We cannot be surprised by that. We can't. If we are, we're being very, very silly.
Uh-huh.
So to realize, yeah, that's what happens. Now, what we're doing in practice is looking for those moments of clarity, those openings. So there it is. Boom.
Yes.
For just a second, and I can see through it. I can see, okay, well, that's conditioning, and conditioning is just attempting to create suffering all the time, but I saw through it. That's great. And then I'm looking for another one of those little moments, a little space between the thoughts, a little moment of brightness when conditioning isn't clouding my vision. I see. Okay, and then, I remember, now what they talk about all the time is, you're not that conditioning, you're the one who's listening to the conditioning. Okay, yeah, I can see that. I'm the one who falls for it. And, wow, but son of a gun, I'm also the one who sees that moment of clarity and feels really good as a result of that. And then, now what else what else they say is, actually, you're not either one of those. You are the clarity. Okay, I can sort of see that. When the clarity is there, that's what I feel like. Everything is bright. It's all, yes, okay, I get it. And that's all we're doing. Moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. That's practice.
Watching what comes up.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to have a moment of clarity and conditioning says, okay, uncle, I quit.
I give up.
Okay, you're just too too pure and holy and wonderful for me. I just, you know, I just have to go live somewhere else. Au contraire, you know, we have one of those moments, and as I, you know, it's a locomotive barreling down on us. If there's,
yeah.
You know, I've started just saying people, especially people who come to a retreat, like there's nothing wrong with you, but just, you know, everywhere I go, don't think this is going to have any effect on your life. You know, you've had these moments, you've seen this stuff, you're at center, you feel good. Don't be prepared. You're going to walk out of the room and conditioning is going to land on you like a ton of bricks. That's how it works. There's nothing wrong with you. It's not a mistake. You're not doing anything you shouldn't be doing. That's how it works.
Wow. And so helpful to be prepared in that way.
Oh, my goodness. I hope so. Sometimes people say, well, that's depressing. You know? But I don't find information like that depressing. I'm with you. I think it's really helpful. So if I think, oh, I've seen the light, and this is it, and I'm going to be free forever, and then conditioning whacks me alongside of the head with, no, you're just the same rotten person you were before. Well, that's going to be depressing if I think that this is, you know, that I've just done something wrong, that I deserve this. But, you know, a drug dealer is always going to try to sell you drugs, and the blackmailer is always going to try to blackmail you, and you're just not going to be a good enough person for that not to happen.
Yes.
It's not.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, that's really helpful.
Yeah, I'm such a wonderful person. I'm trying so hard, and you know, I've suffered so long. So, Mr. Blackmailer, would you please just leave me alone and go do this with somebody else? Because you know, I don't have that much money, and life is hard for me, and I work really hard. And no, it's not going to go that way.
Yep,
that blackmailer is going to work that scam for as long as I'm going to be interested.
Yes, yes.
And interest is interest. Loving it, hating it.
Yes.
It's all interest.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter which side you're on.
Doesn't matter which side of the duality I happen to be falling on at this moment. Falling into duality is falling into duality, and our work is to stay balanced on that what initially feels like a razor's edge.
Yes.
And then suddenly becomes as wide as infinity.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we have another caller.
Very good.
I'd like to welcome Catherine from St. Louis, Missouri. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, Catherine.
Hi. Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm at work, and I haven't been able to listen to your entire show, but I was hearing just the tail end of your conversation, and it really applies to what is going on with me. I'm feeling defeated by a pattern of conditioning,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with my I will get angry and explode,
mm-hmm.
and the pattern seems to be of exploding, and then feeling really bad and feeling ashamed and getting beaten up for exploding, and.
Which is setting you up for the next explosion,
yes,
of course.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. And feeling like I just can't, I can't get out of the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I feel defeated.
And so what's the way out? What do you see as the way out?
Well, what I've been looking at is how it builds.
Uh-huh.
How it starts and how it builds.
Uh-huh.
And it's I've had glimpses of that, and I'm not going to say I have a handle on it, but I've had glimpses of conditioning is already in charge.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already feeling bad about something completely, maybe completely unrelated to what I eventually explode about.
Oh yeah.
But I'm feeling bad about myself, worried about something, not its center, and then it seems to me something maybe triggers some deep hurt or shame, or maybe identification with that. And I'll just explode. And so that's what I've seen so far, and I'm glad I've seen that. I'm worried it's going to happen again.
At one point, we of course it'll happen again. There's no sense in worrying about that, is there?
Okay, I was going to. I was hoping for a different answer, but you're right.
That's kind of a waste of energy.
Yeah.
We used to have a fellow at the monastery who came to us because he was going along in his life thinking that he was fine, you know, fine. And he knocked a container of pencils off of his desk and just proceeded to destroy his office. And he said, maybe there's something going on that I should look at. And so, yeah, and thus began his tour of Zen awareness practice. So I think you're really on to something here. Now, let me ask you this. Where does this usually happen?
At work.
Okay, so do you pretty much explode at the same group of people?
Yes.
And so the MO is you explode and then you feel bad and ashamed. And do you apologize?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And what do they do? What do they say?
They usually say it's fine.
Okay.
They usually think, you know, they're okay with that.
Okay. So here, this is the little assignment, if you want a little assignment.
Okay.
Okay. What you do is go to these people and say, look, we all know that this pattern goes on. And here it is. You know, all of a sudden, I snap, I act like a crazy person, scream, yell, carry on. Moments afterwards, that all of that is over. You know, the volcano has blown, everything is cleared out. I feel terrible. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. I'm horrified at what I've done. I come to you. I apologize. You say it's okay. So here, I'm wondering if we can have some new rules for this game.
Okay.
I don't seem to be able to control this at this point, but I'm working on it really, really hard.
Okay.
And part of working on it is I want to break the cycle. So can you agree to essentially ignore me when this happens? It has nothing to do with you. Please don't take it personally. I hope you don't take it personally. It's just something I do, and I'm trying to figure it out so that I can stop doing it.
Okay.
Okay. And so you get them on your team.
Okay.
And that way, the first thing that can happen is you can get out of the self-hate.
Okay.
Right? Which is, I'm going to say 99% of what's holding this whole thing in place. If there's no self-hate, why go through this?
Okay, so the payoff is the self-hate.
Ooh, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because the first thing you feel is ashamed.
Ashamed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's nothing like shame to bring on a great big old dose of self-hatred.
So what I want from them is to not not react. If
yeah, I mean, they can have whatever experience that
okay.
they have, but just give them the inside information about what's going on.
Okay.
So that they know that you know it has nothing to do with them. It's
okay.
just this builds and builds and builds, and then you have to act like a crazy person and then feel awful and bad and apologize, and that, you know, you recognize that you're in this cycle, and you're trying really hard to get out of this cycle. And if they would, the thing that they could do is not take it personally, not listen to you, not believe it, not take it on. Just,
okay.
You know, okay, there's Catherine. She's going crazy.
Okay.
And, you know, they just walk out of the room and go do something else. And that, and you can let them know. That breaks that cycle of feeling bad. And the process that you're working on now is based in when you no longer feel this shame about it, you'll no longer do it.
Okay.
Right? Because you know these people. I mean, you're intimate enough with them that you, you know, you rage at them with some regularity.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty intimate. They
That's
can
true.
At least know your vulnerability and be included in the work that you're doing to get through this.
Will I at some point, do you think, know how to express?
Oh yeah.
Something without raging and without being afraid.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, the secret to it is not to blame anybody. You know, if you can keep your head enough that you're saying things like, I can't stand it, I'm going crazy, this has nothing to do with you, I have to destroy this office, you know, whatever it is that goes on with you. But you're making it clear that I don't think you did this, I'm not holding you responsible, this is just my experience, I'm just up to my eyebrows, I can't take it any longer, I'm exploding all, you know. And once you make that shift to that kind of conscious awareness as you're going through it, then you're really freed up to do anything you want. You know, you can just say to people, whew, Mount St. Helens here, I'm gonna go take a fast turn around the block and see if I can dissipate some of this insanity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's breaking that cycle of I have to go unconscious to be able to do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I won't be telling them anything they don't know.
Oh,
about
God, no.
That this is a pattern.
Oh, God, no. They'll be so happy that they know that you've caught on to it.
Yeah.
I'm sure,
okay.
It'll be a big relief for everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Let us know, huh?
Okay. And I'm thinking what's something that's coming up is that you've talked about this before. When afterward explode.
Uh-huh.
Afterward, the self-hate, I just watch that. I mean, I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. Just
instead of buying into, God, I was bad, and here I go again.
And the beauty of it is they know. If you're listening to that, it's because you're identified with somebody who wants to feel bad. Because
okay.
You've already set it up so that you don't need to feel bad. Everybody's participating in the experiment with you.
Okay.
So then you really get to see that conditioned voice for what it is. It's trying to stir up trouble where there isn't any.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. Coming up next on Open Air in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned right here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Dawn from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
I have a couple issues, but I wanted to call about dreams in particular. Just a five-second background. I went through a really traumatic divorce about a year ago, and I've been, you know, doing a lot of conscious, compassionate awareness, and really trying to stay present during the day. Not every night, but I often go to sleep, and I have really traumatic, I won't call them nightmares, but really bad dreams about the ex-husband and the woman he cheated with, and they're laughing at me and all this. And I'm just wondering if there's any kind of, I don't want to say the word tips, but if there's any...
But if you have any tips...
If you have any thoughts on this that might help me... You know, it's been about a year, and it's still going on.
Uh-huh.
So...
I was just talking with people about... I was going to make a little joke and say about you when I was in Pittsburgh, but of course.
Yeah.
I wasn't talking about you.
Right.
But we were talking about dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And what people were saying is how when they're on retreat, their dreams often become really wacky.
Okay.
yeah. And what I suspect is going on, you know, I can't say without a doubt that this is what's going on, but when you are working very hard during the day to stay conscious and present,
mm-hmm.
the only place conditioning has to work on you is at night in your dreams.
Mm, that would make sense.
Yeah.
They're really mean-spirited dreams. You know, they're not pleasant at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It, well, very much like conditioning, right?
Exactly, exactly. So that would make sense that that's where it's going to come out.
Yeah, so it's kind of a rough good news that, you know, this is probably the result of all of the effort that you're making to stay conscious and compassionate and present during the day.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, you can do some things that help, that sound kind of crazy until you get the hang of it. But one of them is a very simple one: is to go to sleep with your bladder not empty.
Okay.
And it'll wake you up.
Uh huh.
And this will break the pattern. It'll break the cycle.
Okay.
So you know, people, especially in our culture, have this deep belief that you have to go to sleep. Sleep for 8 hours without moving,
right,
and then wake up and you're fine. Anything other than that is just not the right kind of sleep, and if you don't get enough sleep, you're going to get sick, and all of these kinds of things that actually, in my experience, aren't true. Not that I'm not a great supporter of sleep, because I am, but it's not that kind of, it has to be this way, it has to, so I don't know if you know this from my own personal history, but since I was in the monastery where I trained, I wake up about every 2 hours.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Okay.
Which is slightly beyond the, you know, the kind of the 90-minute sleep cycle that, that human beings do. And so I've just trained myself to do that. The original inspiration was that it was a treatment for depression. And what would happen in the depression is that I would go to sleep, and I would sleep all night without waking up, and I would get into these kind of conditioned patterns, and then I would wake up more depressed than when I went to bed the night before.
Oh.
So breaking that cycle by waking up every 2 hours gave me a better chance not to get caught in one of those conditioning loops.
Sure, absolutely.
It was very effective. And in fact, the thing that I learned as a result of that is that as soon as I went through the that initial, I'm going to die of exhaustion, I really grew to love it. And since then, I'm fascinated by, you know, the world at night.
And you can do that without an alarm clock now and everything?
Yes.
You just get up?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the same way that I've learned that it's possible to wake up at any time I want to wake up.
Right.
Period. So, yeah.
Do you get up and do anything, or do you just get up and...
Yep.
Okay.
I get up and go outside, check out what the moon is doing and what the stars are doing and, you know, what the air feels like and smells like and all that. So At this point, I just love it.
Yeah.
Because it begins to feel like you're up and awake 24 hours a day.
Right.
And
you're not missing anything.
Yeah, you're not missing anything with all that time out for sleep. And I find that I actually wake up in the morning much more rested and refreshed.
Okay.
The other thing that I would offer you is as soon as you come to conscious awareness, do something that brings you back to yourself,
okay,
and reminds you that you want to come back to center. And it can be as simple as, I just woke up, I want to be at center. Or even, I just woke up, and here I am at center. Something that takes you out of that groggy kind of half-awake place that conditioning can use so beautifully to do it to you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What about journaling or something like that in the morning?
You can. You know, I'm not a big fan of journaling. If you find it's
I don't do it. I'm just thinking of ideas. I didn't know that you weren't a fan of journaling.
No, and the reason is that so often, now if you did it every morning for a while, it could be interesting,
mm-hmm.
but people who journal, you know, who are journalers, will often report that they have just boxes of journals that essentially say the same thing.
Oh, okay.
And it's because one part of them always, the journaler always journals,
mm-hmm.
and you don't really get to hear from other folks.
Right.
So if it's a process that you use where maybe for a month you would wake up every morning and go through your, you know, what's there when you first wake up, and if it's journaling, I like an exercise like you put the pen on the paper and you don't lift it up for 10 minutes.
Okay.
That sort
okay.
of thing. So it's not just going up into conditioned mind and, you know, what shall I write next?
Mm-hmm.
It's
cool.
a more...
When I first went through the divorce, I tried journaling, and boy, that almost made it worse.
Yeah.
I mean, I just felt I was like dwelling
yeah.
in the journaling.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
back on the past and what happened and what went wrong and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just we can find ourselves just writing down the story.
Right.
So I'm no longer just talking about it in my head. Now I'm writing it down. And instead of distancing me from it, it's just working me up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are good suggestions, and it sounds like I'm not unusual, so...
No, I think you're right on track. I think the thing that's unusual is that you're working so hard to stay present during the day. I
yeah.
think that's the thing that's tripping you up, and that's a very good thing to trip up over.
Extremely unusual for me.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, trauma drives us to... strange places.
Yes.
Yeah. Finally, I'm so miserable. I will try centering.
Right. Well,
yeah.
that's exactly what happened in my case.
Yeah. And it's a good thing.
I was unconscious for years.
Yep. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
It, you know, I always kid people. The old Neil Sedaka song that my version of it is: "Waking up is hard to do." And
that's a good one.
Yeah. And that's it. You know, what was going to cause you to wake up and realize that you were sleeping through your life? Well, trauma.
Right.
And that's what inspired most of us to start waking up. And when we look back on it, we're grateful for it. But boy, as we're going through it, it's not a party.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's getting better, but it's a struggle every day.
Oh, yeah.
And it probably
will be. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So, do you have another caller holding? Because I wanted to talk to you about something else. But if you have one, I can call back next week.
Not in this moment.
You don't?
We're okay.
Oh, okay. The next thing I wanted to ask you about, because I'm starting to have... I just want to figure out what your thoughts are on alcohol.
Uh-huh.
I used to drink, and then I kind of stopped. I was kind of acting like an idiot when I drank. And recently, I have zero tolerance left for alcohol, and I'd have one drink, and all of a sudden, conditioning was out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was, you know, back to acting like a jerk and back
yeah.
to all these behaviors that I don't like. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on alcohol or how I'm not dying to have a drink, or but if it's part of the practice, if it's not, and I haven't heard, forgive me if I haven't heard you talk about it before.
No, it's fine. You know, in our practice, the way we do it, there are just no shoulds. Now,
okay.
you can run into a lot of Buddhists who kind of take the precepts that we accept as guidelines for our life it's almost as the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of you better not. And, you know, the Ten Commandments and Buddhist precepts are, I project, coming from exactly the same place, which is your life is not going to work if you don't attend to these basic issues. You know, you cannot go around killing people and lead a happy life. You just can't. Those
right.
two things don't go together. And so we use the precepts in exactly that way. This is something that you might want to look into, because these are the areas where people tend to suffer. And so alcohol is actually one of those, alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not coming from a place of, if you do this, you are a bad person and you'd better stop or you're going to go to hell.
Right.
It comes from exactly the place that you're looking at.
Okay.
You know, when I do this, I don't have a result that I like.
Ever.
Yeah. And
yeah.
So eventually, you know, it's like I love sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat sugar, and then I begin to pay attention, and I realize every time I eat sugar, I don't feel good.
Right.
So it's not a, I shouldn't eat sugar, I'm a bad person if I do. Just paying attention, eventually I get to a place of saying, you know, this doesn't feel good, and I don't want to not feel good. So I'm not going to do this thing. What else might I do that would take care of the same need
mm-hmm.
that I have or desire that I have that's not harmful to
right.
me or to anybody else?
Okay.
Yeah, and when we move around to that place, then it's actually letting go of something is not deprivation. It's really gaining something that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to act like a jerk, and I don't want to feel bad.
Yes.
So this is a okay. good way for me to do that.
Right. And I haven't felt good drinking in so long, and it's and you know I've used it just here and there to calm my nerves.
Uh huh.
It may calm my nerves, but I end up real nervous the next day.
Yeah.
Wondering what I said and who I said it to and why my head hurts and
yeah.
all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And.
Oh.
You know, that kind of relationship is such a clear picture of conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
What somebody, say an alcoholic, deals with alcohol or somebody who's addicted to sugar or chocolate or what you know whatever it is, the voice starts in campaigning that this is going to make you happy. It's going
right.
to make you feel better. You're going to enjoy this.
Right, it'll calm your nerves or whatever it is.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then you do it, and that's just not your experience.
Right.
And then,
right.
you know, in a shockingly short period of time, there it is back again, trying to talk you into the same thing. And,
yeah.
you know, we can feel bad about ourselves, but it's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
What it is simply a process of learning the voice lies. That's not my experience. It's not going to make me happy or make me feel better. No, in fact, I don't want to do it. Not because if I do it, I'll be a bad person. Just I don't want to do it because I don't like what it does to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. It's a choice from a whole different place. And the choice from that place gives us a confidence that we're not going to, in a weakened moment, succumb to something that we really still want to do but gave up because we don't want to be a bad person.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
when you give up something from that place of, or let something go from that place of, this doesn't take care of me, I don't like it, I don't want to do it, you know, you're just not going to get in a bad enough place
right, you're done.
that you're going to be convinced that that's something that you want to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm coming to your There Is Nothing Wrong With You in August, and then I'm driving down for your weekend at Esalen.
Oh, fabulous.
Because I'm in Southern California, so all in one shot I'm doing both retreats.
Wow. Well, yes. I'm going to look forward to that.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Don. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have about 7 minutes left here, and I have a little bit longer email question here.
All right.
Hi, Sherry. I recently attended your talk in New York City and had a great time watching you in action. I'm in a really difficult space, and I'm being resourceful in attempting to shift it. Riding it has resulted in several pit stops this week that included a carafe of wine, about 60,000 calories of food, 64 emails to men at online dating sites, and a tune-up visit to my therapist.
That's a busy week.
Yeah. I am not one who tends toward hyperbole, so believe me when I say that this is a bit overboard. I just had a one-month affair with a Buddhist teacher leader after a six-month train wreck of a relationship with another Buddhist. I idealized both given their spiritual path. Both turned out to be just ordinary guys, but emotionally unavailable. The bottom line is that when Mr. Buddhist leader told me there was no, quote, spark, unquote, it pulled the rug right out from under me. I am no longer interested in the visceral spark of early infatuation. I am more interested in intimacy and connection. I am stuck for a week now in a depression that keeps yelling at me that I am not lovable, that men don't want authentic, that no matter how I try working on me, I can't be fixed.
I can't be?
Fixed.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so I read There Is Nothing Wrong With You, have made maps of my thoughts, and even of the subtext of those thoughts, and I still don't get it. My question is, what am I missing in terms of my thinking? I see my critical thoughts. I also see how they aren't reality-based. I experience every disappointment with men as an illustration of my own, quote, not good enoughness, unquote, or, quote, too muchness, unquote. I can't seem to function outside of this, and I am miserable because of it. I used to hide. Now I am authentic in my relationships. I used to be unavailable myself. Now I allow myself to be open. None of this has changed the outcome. Any feedback would be greatly appreciated.
Oh, do I have feedback?
From a listener in New York City.
All right. I had such a good time there. And so it was a great evening. And I'm glad this person was there, because now they're writing, and hopefully they're going to be listening, and I have some things to say on this subject.
Okay, great.
Okay. This is a description of self-hate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yes.
What's being described is self-hatred. It's karmically, socially based, and it's self-hatred. A person operating in self-hatred cannot be open, okay, cannot be authentic.
Yes.
It's not possible. Open and authentic come from center.
Yes.
So what's masquerading as open and authentic is egocentric karmic conditioning, doing what it does, coming from where it comes from, and then saying, see, this is who you really are, and who you really are isn't good enough. So first, you know, job one is get thee to a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Yes.
And get some, you know, tools in the old tool belt for confronting this. And so that's job one. But until then, practice getting back to center.
Yes.
Finding center, becoming friends with center, doing some of the mentoring work that we talk about, you know, which is as simple as, This is your daughter. This is your little sister. This is your aunt. This is your best friend. This is somebody that you really care about who is feeling these things, thinking these things, saying these things, and you look at that person and say, that is utterly ridiculous. Who are you? What is going on with you that you can think these things about yourself and come to these conclusions? And so it's moving into that mentoring place. That can actually find authenticity and openness and live in the world from that. Somebody who is stuck in my focus is on a relationship to make me be all right is coming from self-hatred. And it's not just, obviously, the relationship. I need this other thing in order to be all right. No, that's self-hatred. Now, people out there going, so what you're saying is if I do Zen awareness practice, I'm never going to have a relationship. That's not what I'm saying. You can want a relationship. You can enjoy a relationship. You can have any kind of relationship that you want to have. But if it's coming from I need this to be all right, it's going to lead to suffering.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry that there are spiritual teachers of any tradition who use their role in people's lives to take advantage of them in that way. I think that's it's something all of us can fall into. And the thing that I wish is that everyone who studies anything, everyone who learns from anybody, would realize that is not a good relationship to pursue in any other than the defined ways that it's set up. So if I go to a doctor, that person is my doctor. I don't want to sleep with that person. If I go to a psychotherapist, that person is my psychotherapist. Sleeping with that person is not going to be a good idea. If I go to a spiritual teacher, that person is there for me to learn from spiritually, not sexually.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very important. They're difficult relationships, and if everybody is on board with what works and does what doesn't work, we're all better off, because trusting that somebody is going to be a great enough authority not to give in to their own frailties is not wise.
Yes. Yes. Wow.
I hear the music.
I hear the music.
Thanks, Michael.
Serenading us out.
Serenading us. Serenading us stage left.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Good night.
Bye.